Hello, welcome to the Thinking is Material podcast, where we delve into the dynamic intersections of art, design and research. I'm your host, Joanna Lee, an academic and artist researcher at Leeds Beckett University in the north of England. This podcast explores how thinking itself manifests as a material process in approaches to research, emphasising the creative acumen and adaptability that define the methods of today's creative practitioners. As a mover and drawer, I've always explored how thinking is materialised through research methods. It is inspired by Tim Ingold's Thinking and Acquiring Knowledge on the Move, where thought is woven into how we move, act and learn. The podcast aims to expand an approach of thinking on the move and engaging with the stuff of social, political and cultural concerns as materials that matter. This year's series, I'll be talking to art and design researchers within the research cluster Participate, nestled in the vibrant Leeds Arts Research Centre at Leeds Beckett University. Today, we're venturing into a fascinating exploration of patterns of migration, an insightful piece by Carol Hunt, Mary Ikonyadu and Billy Kiyosiglu. In this episode, we'll uncover the aims and methods of this project, working with remnant fabrics and hand sewing skills collected with women and their migratory stories. Whether a postgraduate student, an academic or a researcher, this discussion is tailored for you as we peel back the layers of this compelling research, igniting conversations on innovation, creativity and the evolving landscape of art and design research. So, grab your notebooks and settle in as we explore how our creative processes not only inform our practice, but also shape the very fabric of knowledge itself. Let's dive in. You're here today on Thinking is Material podcast with Mary Ikonyadu, Carol Hunt and Billy Kiyosiglu. Dr. Carol Hunt is a senior lecturer in MA Surface Pattern and Textiles, leading critical studies in fashion and textiles at the University of Central Lancashire. Carol has a background in fashion and textile design in art history and visual culture. Several of her projects link multiple perspectives from clothing and textiles, material culture, arts and health, where emphasis is placed on exploring the historical, social and cultural dimensions of women's health and well-being through alternative material methodologies. Carol is a member of the Social History Society, the Northern Network for Medical Humanities Research and the Centre for Migration, Diaspora and Exile. She's also on the steering group of UCLA's Institute for Creativity, Communities and Culture. Dr. Mary Ikonyadu is a senior lecturer at Leeds School of Arts in Leeds at Leeds Beckett University, where she co-directs the Participate Research Cluster, Design for Equity, Mobility and Agency. She also serves as Secretary of the European Society for Periodical Research and is an editorial board member of the Journal of Periodical Studies. She acts as a reviewer and sits on several scientific committees for art design research projects and scientific journals. Mary works at the intersection of design, history, visual culture and periodical studies. Her research focuses on illustrated periodicals as aesthetic, material and political spaces where displaced populations negotiate, reclaim, imagine and perform their national subjectivities. Her research specialism and interests include refugee publishing, editorial design, the visual cultures of the Cold War with a special interest in East Germany, Greek visual and periodical cultures, and more recently, tourism, promotion and national identities. Billy Kiyosiglu is a lecturer in BA Graphic Design at Middlesex University in London, and he's a design partner at Brighton the Corners and We Are Boring, based in London. Billy studied graphic design at Camberwell College of Arts and the Royal College of Art before joining Frank Philippin at design studio Brighton the Corners. He has worked with numerous clients in the corporate, cultural and publishing sectors, including the Goethe Institute, Department of Education, Vitra Design Museum, Fries Publishing, the German Post Office and the artist Anish Kapoor. Billy has given talks at the Royal College of Art, the Typographic Circle and the Design Museum in London and joins Patterns of Migration as their graphic consultant. Patterns of Migration is an interdisciplinary research and community project that delves into the sharing of stories through clothing and textiles with a focus on themes of home and belonging. The project was initiated by Dr. Carol Hunt and Dr. Mary Aikinyadu in Lancashire, England, a region where migration is closely connected to textile production and deeply rooted in the histories of colonisation, migrant and working class labour. More recently, graphic designer and lecturer Billy Kiyosoglu joined the project after working closely on the design of the online exhibition. By examining personal clothing items and objects, as well as those held in textile collection, this project investigates how they can serve as a catalyst for recounting stories of movement and migration, intertwined and interwoven with stories of textile heritage, both local and global, social and cultural, weaving histories of memory and identity. This project offers a unique window into the past, where textiles and clothing have played a pivotal role in shaping cultural identity and heritage. These textile objects accompany our everyday movements. They are part of our daily interactions as material objects. They're invested with symbolic meaning and are often expressions of our individual and collective identities. As craft objects, they speak of both their making and their maker. This complex, functional, symbolic and sensory set of qualities that are entangled between lives and textiles is what patterns of migration define as a collective knowledge. And they're here today to discuss their experience of developing that project, the methods that they have discovered to draw out those conversations, and where that project is leading in this conversation. Good morning. We are here today on Thinking is Material podcast with Mary Aikinyadu, Carol Hunt and Billy Kiyosoglu. And they will be talking about their patterns of migration project. So before we get stuck into all talking and unpacking all of that, let's just hear you and who each of you are. Mary, shall we start with you?
Sure. Good morning. Thank you very much, Joanna, also for the excellent pronunciation of our Greek surnames. My name is Mary Aikinyadu, and I am a senior lecturer at Leeds School of Arts at Leeds Beckett University. And yeah, I think I'm going to leave it there, actually. Otherwise, our bios will be
too long.
Yeah.
And yourself, Carol?
Oh, hi. Hi, everyone. And thank you, Joanna, for inviting us to do this. My name's Carol Hunt, and I'm a senior lecturer in the School of Arts and Media at the University of Central Lancashire.
OK, so we're spanning the Yorkshire and Lancashire divide at this point. Mm-hmm. Great. Collaborating across our counties. And Billy.
Hi. So I'm Billy Kiyosoglu. And I'm a lecturer in graphic design at Middlesex University, and I also have my own design studio.
Lovely. So we are stretched right across. I love that. And in being stretched across, that's actually very thinking of your locations in this country and where you'll come from and your backgrounds. That leads us nicely into sort of your project on patterns of migration. I would like to hear how that and where that started, how you all even met.
Shall I go for it, Carol?
I was thinking about this morning, kind of. I know I met Mary at UCLan because Mary was a colleague at UCLan, but I couldn't remember when we actually met. Can you remember, Mary?
Yes, I do.
Please remind me.
Yes, I am the kind of person who finds people who might be interesting and emails them and say, "Oh, would you like to have a coffee with me?" And that's what I did with Carol, and that's how we met. We had a coffee and we really hit it off, and we started having coffees. And a long time after that, we actually embarked on the project.
Okay. So you're a collector, Mary.
I am a collector of people. I am actually. That's the only good thing I can, you know, it's a really big skill I have. Much better, much stronger than my writing skill.
And I think it's quite interesting at Youth Clan, because often Mary and I were in different buildings, yeah. and often people stay in their buildings and they don't really mix. But I think that what we kind of got round was we did kind of make sure that we met, didn't we, for coffee, kind of in and out of each other's offices. So, yeah, it's nice. We got on like a house on fire kind of right from the get-go. So a lot in common.
And made time for that, which is yeah, lovely. Which is quite a nice way of thinking about, you know, where things start. Things start sometimes with just a meeting of minds, not this idea that, oh, let's go and do a project together, mm-hmm. which, it's quite nice to hear about how things evolve and emerge. So where did you emerge from, Billy?
I met Mary, in London, In the olden days, pre-Brexit, when there's loads of Greeks in London, but as part of a bigger sort of Athens, yeah, network of people. So friends yeah. of friends. We had friends of friends in common. So okay. that's how we met.
And how did the project start then?
My involvement with the project is more recent. So I wasn't okay. involved at the start. And I got involved as a graphic designer. So for me, it was initially a graphic design project. So to take all this content and give it some sort of form and think of it as an online exhibition. Think of it as something that mm-hmm. has an online presence and that gets sort of built on.
Okay. So at that point, I think it's quite important to ask for Mary and Carol to tell us about mm. that content that you were shaping mm. and tell us what this Patterns of Migration project is and where it started and mm. what you gave Billy to work with, really.
Oh, Billy.
Can I just start by saying that Billy's role was instrumental on you know, on the exhibition and beyond the design and the format is actually, you know, it kind of gave it another form, if you like. Mm-hmm. So, the, you know, it's one of the iterations of the project as an online exhibition, which is, you know, and also his very proactive involvement into finding stories and discussing mm-hmm. it with us, which is why he ended up being part of the gang, really. Mm-hmm.
Billy's been very patient with us because for anyone who works in the university knows what it's like trying to get funding for things. Yeah. And he's kept the conversation going and had a really brilliant input. Even when we didn't have funding, he's kind of been beavering away in the background, kind of getting things sorted out and supporting us. So, yeah.
It's the sort of the nice thing and the curse of a website is like mm-hmm. it doesn't, because I've designed a lot of books. And books have a deadline and they go to print and you find a typo and you have to live with it, you know, whereas a website kind of never goes to print. So it sort of can go on. It can go on forever, really. It can go on for years. So, yeah.
I quite like the way you've described that, the way it goes on and it's evolving and it keeps a sense of liveness about it, because actually your project and the fact that it's a community project and is about sharing stories with cloth and textiles, mm-hmm. those are ongoing and growing stories too. So it is perhaps, you know, indicative that the website allows that mm-hmm. to be captured and to grow with you as you go that. So there's a nice synchronicity between the form of what you've chosen to do and actually what is the driver in growing that project. So in terms of that, would you like to just describe how you started this? Where did even the title, the notion of this working with cloth and textiles and sharing stories start?
Well, I think, can I just say a little bit about that? Because I think that the name itself is really interesting. I think that kind of it is the spark, the connectivity between me and Mary initially. Because yeah. my background and what I teach, I'm located in the fashion and textiles department. Mm-hmm. So my background is in fashion and textiles, printed textiles and art history and visual culture. And Mary's in migration studies. So I think that when we got together and we started talking, Sorry, I said something wrong there, Mary. Okay, so Mary's in a kind of different discipline to me, but I think the name Patterns picks up on the kind of textile element,
yeah,
and the migration, where we to kind of divide us up, taps much more into Mary's background than mine. So it's okay. A really good kind of segue into both of our backgrounds and professions.
So absolutely. You really did.
You absolutely agree. Yeah.
Go on, Mary, because it sounds like you had a meeting of not just minds and getting on then. You had a meeting between your two areas of discipline and research. Would that
it
be
It was an
fair?
Area of discipline and research, exactly, Joanna, because I'm working on visual culture, which is why, you know, we might have to, visual culture, and cultural history with an interest in migration. I mean, I work a lot on magazines and periodicals and print and the way that they carry stories but also reflect, you know, imaginings of migrants, refugees and diasporas. So, so this kind of interest in migration, if you like, met with the patterns and also the conversations that Carol and I were having and the interest that we're both having in social history, in social cultural history, you know, and Carol can speak to that a bit more in regards to her research, but mine also being, you know, it's kind of, I'm interested in print primarily and now beyond it, and the way that it travels alongside or instead of or against the current of the owners, if you like, or the producers. So the narratives of this, you know, this entails and the politics a lot of the time. So I'm very interested in the kind of the politics of migration, both in terms of the people and objects.
I think it's fascinating to me because, I mean, I've come from a sort of a background of reading quite a bit of Tim Ingold, and he does have in Lines of Brief History, he talks about weaving and traditional crafts in some areas of weaving and women telling stories, and then how these crafts and this engagement with textiles is located and can be specific to cultures. And then, you know, the other thing that fascinated me with that is, you know, the textile patterns to me that I know of are of patchwork, weaving, applique, you know, these different things. So patterns to me didn't just seem surface visual.
No, it's not.
It seemed very much embedded in the structure of cloth. And those patterns are being where people move, where they find themselves in a diaspora, and the stories they take with them and how they meet other people's stories, which is essentially what's happened to you two here, and then Billy coming in. There is this entwining happening and this weaving together of discipline and research that it seems to be echoed in your actual project. Okay, tell me more. I'm going to let you run with sort of the whole sort of giving us the whole picture of how you set that up before I ask anything more, I think.
I don't remember the details, to be honest with you, but we just started, discussing our interest, then our reflection of where we were, you know, in Preston, in Lancashire, and all the kind of social history, of working class and textiles. And, you know, as I said, Carol can speak to that a bit more. And also me based in Manchester and the whole kind of textile history of Manchester. You know, using your expression of weaved into the social fabric, right? So it's like a history, of movement, a history of labor. And it's a history that's very, very much alive. So we still have a lot of the patterns and the textiles and the clothes. And so, you know, the objectivity of the actual material, but also, the stories as, you know, living history, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
so go for it. Yeah.
No, it's okay. I mean, it's interesting reflecting on this actually, because I mean, for me, I'm very interested in clothes and people's belongings. So for me, it's not necessarily the, as you say, the print. It's to do with the items of clothing, perhaps, that people choose to keep, mm-hmm. why they choose to keep them. So I very much locate anything that I do with clothing and textiles as part of material culture.
Mm. So actually how clothing is woven into our lives.
Exactly.
And how it how stays it holds, with us.
Sorry, Joanna. Yeah.
So no,
how
no,
it
go
holds
on.
The DNA
yeah.
of people. So its smell, its touch, its closeness to the body is very interesting to me. And yeah, as I say, the memories that these things can hold. So unlike a souvenir, which can sit on a mantelpiece somewhere. I mean, it's interesting, again, with patterns of migration and what's on the website, is often these things don't see the light of the day. They're often at the back of somebody's wardrobe and they don't come out until someone like me and Mary asks for them to be seen. But nonetheless, they can hold very powerful memories. And they're often linked to kind of ordinary experiences, linked closely to people.
So they really are living story objects themselves, aren't they? And
yes.
sensory
absolutely.
Objects.
There's an affective element of that, which is, you know, an absolutely a great interest. But also, I mean, just to kind of move the narrative along also, and actually the interest in the project, it is, all of this come alive in real life in many ways, you know. And I think our we embarked on work in workshops with Carol.
Okay.
So we could, you know, we could kind of talk about these two workshops, one being the repair, refuge and renewal workshop, which we first ran, and then a second workshop, which we ran with funding from Being Human Festival in 2021. So
I'd like to hear those, yeah, because that really locates where you've been working, and the communities that you've taken this concept with too. So, let's go. Let's hear about repair, refuge and renewal. The RR&R. It sounds kind of. It's kind of.
We are very good with names, but
it sounds restorative.
I want to talk about the actual. I want to continue, you know, like talking about patterns of migration and the actual activation, if you like, of, you know, what is essentially a methodology. And you know, I want to talk about that in relation to the workshops without going to the specific of the workshop as such first, anyway. Which is the, you know, when we're talking about materiality and smell and patterns and you know, something that could be a knitted. You know, coat or something that, you know, that you keep, it actually becomes something else when it's passed around, when you're at, you know, when you're asked amongst a group to talk about it. And we have found in workshops that it really kind of is an enabler and an activator of, not only like personal and collective narratives, but it's something very, it's like, you know, kind of, I don't know how to say it without sounding fluffy, it's like very human and immediate. And you know, that kind of the sharing is also a very important part of the project, right?
So are they bringing these things in and passing them between each other, or are you giving them to them? How does that even work?
Did you want to talk about repair, refuge and renewal was a very different, what Mary's talking about there, I think relates much more to the second workshop.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I guess, yes. So I'm guessing, how did you even gather these communities together and what did you ask them to do?
Okay. So we were but at that time, I don't know if you've heard of, Gawthorpe Hall.
Yeah.
It's an amazing textile collection and we had a member of staff at UCLAN who was closely connected to Gawthorpe Hall and the textile collection. They're two separate things. So we partnered up with them for both workshops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So they were an in for us. Gawthorpe Hall were doing a lot of outreach work in the community. So they were an in for us. Having someone working at UCLAN. I'm not sure if she'd left by then, actually, but I don't think she had. But anyway,
I think she had then, but yeah.
Had she? Okay,
yeah,
but she was still kind of connected up to us. We're good friends. And that was a kind of way in for us into that community to kind of.
Okay.
Yeah. Which I think was really.
Who would you say was the demographic of that community? Is that local? Is that invited participants? I mean, how did you collect them together to work? I'm presuming with that collection, was that?
Well, I was going to say something about that as well. And that kind of, I mean, I work quite closely with a lot of archives to do with textiles and clothing. And that's an interesting thing in itself. For me personally, my research, because I'm actually not that interested in oak chaw and kind of posh people's clothing. I'm very interested in the clothing of ordinary people, so to say.
Yeah.
But there isn't an awful lot left. And anyone who studies kind of dress and textiles will know that the clothing of the poor, and if you read any of John Stiles' work, there's nothing left of it, really, just scraps, and it's often to be found on quilts. It's been cut up, passed down, handed down. So you're often working from a lot of photographs, you know, if you're studying textile history, textile and fashion clothing history. So it's quite interesting working with archives and museums who often have very special collections, who can bring things in to give you an idea of, you know, what things were like. Yeah. in certain periods of history. So working with Gawthorpe Textiles, they not only gave us access to communities, which was very useful for us, but they also brought in items for the collection to study. So we had this dynamic going on between people's personal belongings that they brought along and also items from the collection.
Did you ask them specifically to bring things along then for that workshop? Okay.
Yeah.
So how did that work then? You have the archive, you have their own objects. What did you ask them to do with that?
Going back, the two workshops were very different. So, if we take a patterns of migration also as a methodology and approach for us to get to these narratives and record these narratives, if you like, and analyze these narratives on a later stage. Repair, Refuge and Renewal was a call by Gawthorpe to refugee and asylum seeker women. So the migration element. So it was kind of an obvious match for us to be invited to work with them on that workshop. There were sewing techniques and skilling up and we've got a short video in the website, I believe, that gives a kind of a better visual idea of what that happened, of how that happened rather, or an edited version of it. So you do have these kind of personal narratives that are being shared during making, so this is, this was Repair, Refuge and Renewal. And our next workshop was much more controlled by us, if you like. So it was us bringing Gawthorpe rather than the other way around.
Okay.
So that kind of changed that dynamic.
And you wanted to experiment.
Yeah.
You took the collection to the women, and I'm making a huge presumption here that it was women.
It sounds like it was. Okay.
You're right.
So in the first project, they came to the collection, but in the next project, the Being Human Festival, did you take the collection to them?
The Being Human Festival was a public event. We wanted to get the research out, and that's part of what the Being Human Festival is also. So actually, we found through links, but also through an open call, people came out in Burnley,
Burnley.
I always think, Burnley. And so we ran, a workshop that we organized very much at a certain time. So it was open to people, and there was a call to bring patterns, to bring items of clothing, actually. I think that was the call, with a narrative to share. And actually this was the closer to the methodology that we have come across, during that workshop, because it was very much, organized, but also we had the space and we had the people, we had we also had a collaboration with, Manasa Mitra, who is a performer, and who helped us facilitate that workshop, just quite an amazing woman. And so we made a kind of a sound piece production out of that, which is also on the website. So the particulars of the workshop were all of the stuff that we were talking about. We did have objects from the collections that we handled and passed around.
Yeah.
We had the curator of the Goldthorpe to tell us some of that narrative about every item.
Yeah.
We shared the space and the materiality, mm-hmm. and the, you know, and we were discussing and you know, around the stories that came out from the actual objects themselves. That was the first smaller part, and the second part was patterns of migration, was where we passed around the objects that we brought. And these were, you know, these were the kind of the storytelling element came, you know, the role of patterns in people's lives, patterns being, you know, textiles, items of clothing. The patterns that emerged through, you know, the shared stories also.
I mean, I'm seeing patterns in everything. I'm seeing patterns in crossing of hands as you exchange garments and pieces of cloth. I'm seeing patterns in the exchange of words as like strings and threads in the air as you weave stories, cross over or find common ground or, you know, disperse into other areas. I mean, the patterns don't just seem to be anymore, even in the story of where people have come from or in just the cloth. It seems to be you are literally making patterns there and then with the community. Go on, Billy.
That makes me think when one of the tasks of the website and the first discussions was whether we create tags or whether people, we give the option of people to search, you know, with tags. Mm-hmm. Of course, then you have to tag everything. And you have to decide what it is you're tagging. Are you tagging, you know, geography? Are you tagging types of fabric? Are you tagging materials? Are you tagging, you know, how do you call it? Well, one of the things that I noticed early on is like people mentioned their dad or their uncle or their mum.
Mm, okay.
So I thought we should tag that because it's my grandmother's, you know, something or other, my dad's, whatever. But yeah, very soon it became obvious that there's loads of mums. There's loads of, when you click the mum tag, there's a lot. And, you know, the dads are kind of quite further down. It's probably, I haven't checked, but yeah, that's another pattern that emerges, like how many mums are involved in this.
So you started to tag according to people's relationships, the frequently mentioned sort of themes in the stories?
Yeah, so, well, I mean, everyone has the text that accompanies their imagery, their item. So, I mean, the tags at the moment are still dormant. They're all there, but we haven't activated it. So we've been tagging along. But, you know, we haven't put them up. But that becomes obvious just from the design point of view, working on the site.
It sounds like these were the objects, weren't they? I mean, we have like the waistcoats and, and t-shirts and coats. And because I think that's really interesting that, you know, that Billy opened that up, because that's where patterns come beyond the family. Actually, we wanted to objectify, you know, make it more like less about the narratives and the personal relationship and kind of look at waistcoats, you know, and then the narrative emerges not because of the object, because the object's arbitrary in many ways. It's about the narrative and the personal relationship and the sharing of that narrative.
I feel like you're creating a dynamic ping board where people just jump on these tags and are moving between, and they're actually making their own patterns of understanding what's going on with these stories. And so that says to me that this whole project, when you say about being live and it's physical and it's happening with these people, it's in a constant generative mode because of how people will be interacting with those objects. Because if we just even think about involuntary memory of how taste, smell, image, color, an object makes us respond, you are provoking memory and storytelling in people through that that the way you're shaping that website.
And the way you describe that is, I would dare say, similar to the workshop space and the online space, because it's a personal narrative, right? Yeah. Or individual narrative.
Yeah.
But I think that kind of added layer of the workshop and engaging with people that you don't know and sharing that space, it actually triggers so much more. So it triggers a memory in a very different sense when you actually have to articulate it and share it there and then, or being asked by strangers about it, or passing it on, or have a conversation. So that kind of does something very, very different in a workshop. And then on the individual level, on a personal level, the narrative could be, you know, it triggers the same kind of memory. But there is a notion there of notions of belonging, and I think that's really kind of important. It's very much of in my agenda and in my research, but also it's in there, both in the workshop, you know, when you're actually amazed to find patterns, right?
Yeah.
In like a better world with people, again, that you haven't met. And kind of that belonging in a broader group. I don't like the word community for that sense, and I can problematize it later. But you know, also on a website, what you were saying, you kind of go from a waistcoat. What is a waistcoat? You know, you just start checking the waistcoats. It's about the stories, and it's about this notion of belonging of these very different stories that you can kind of navigate as a viewer or as a participant. But then again, that brings out, you know, patterns, right? Across geography, as Billy said, family, et cetera.
You've kind of led us there anyway, but I thought where we were when you were describing how that story making and pattern making happens in the space, physical space, and online, and how they replicated a little bit on the website and in the space, and you bringing it around that round to personal narrative and belonging. I was going to ask, what is the reaction of those people that are attending that workshop space? How do they respond? What do they say? What kind of things are they mentioning? We've obviously got family members and objects in there, but how did they respond to you and that project, and how did they feel about their stories and sense of belonging, would you say?
Can I just say a little bit about just going back to the workshop itself and the kind of focus on the ordinary? So even though we had some absolutely beautiful items from the Gawthorpe textile collections, and Rachel is very, very informative and told wonderful kind of, she gave us some amazing information about the provenance of the garments, but it always feels like there's that lack, whereas where you're talking about people and the things that they bring along, we move into a completely different realm of the monomic, basically, and how people, they kind of connect the textiles that they brought in, or the items of clothing were very much kind of connected to everyday life. So they're outside of the realm of the kind of the posh collections and the museum. They're located, which I think is what textiles is all about. It's located very much in the everyday. And that's where it has resonance and value to this project in terms of story time, because it is so connected up to everyday experience.
So did you find some of their responses were very much to do with their everyday experiences, their working life, their family life, their, you know, those things that we rely on as the patterns of our being and belonging?
I think very much so. And again, you have to be careful, because you never know. Objects are powerful, and you never know what kind of memories they're about to release, especially in those settings. So we need to be careful how we kind of approach those kind of workshops where we're talking about things that, you know, might bring to the fore not always positive experiences.
Did you find your methodology to do with the workshop, you had to actually embrace the role of being quite empathic and listening and being alongside your workshop members, rather than this is what you're going to do and what can you tell us kind of approach. Would you say that?
No, absolutely, because if you think about it, the first workshop was about making, you know, you're like, you're making while you're sharing. And the second workshop, we actually brought, you know, the facilitator, Marisa Vito, that I was telling you about, for that reason, to kind of have somebody else navigate the room. But it's, what we did was we read poetry at some point, you know, which we didn't bring. Like, people either remembered it. I don't even remember how it came. It was somebody suggested. It wasn't planned or anything. You know, somebody did remember a poem, and then we went around and some people shared a poem, and I went online and found a Greek poem by Kostas Kavafis, and, you know, I was like, I wasn't planned. It was completely like that. Yeah. And then there was some sort of sound making. So we brought different approaches of creating the space, and that space being, you know, reflecting what people, you know, whoever was there and then at the time, basically.
So even though you had this workshop and these objects, you were opening that up to what are other things that that might prompt people to do in their sharing, like you would as if you were sitting in a room and going, oh, I remember this song, this poem, or I have this story, or I have this, I remember using this object for the first time, or, you know.
Participants so brought them to interrupt you, Joanna. Participants brought this rather than we brought us. Brought
yeah,
them,
that's but you facilitated know, so was, yeah. that intuition and that association that the and I would say facilitated those associations for them. That must have been quite a setup that you a spatial setup that you created. For them to feel comfortable enough to do that. I mean, if that, even if that was me coming into a room to pick up something, I might feel quite awkward about sharing a story or a personal memory or reminding myself that something. So I'm kind of curious as to what that space felt like and how you facilitated that for them to feel so comfortable and to feel going to be received with some compassion and listening ears.
I think trust, as you say, I think it's really important. Again, on these kind of projects, I think the space itself is very important. This wasn't in the university, it was in a community centre where a lot of the participants use the community centre, so it's a familiar space. Bev was there as well, who works with some of these people on a regular basis, some of the participants. So I think that is really important, the space itself. I think it
we spent some time there, right? Yeah. You know, it's not that we went in and out.
Okay. So would you say there was a little bit of familiarity with your faces or a sense that you were at ease yourself? Because I am curious about this, because it's we talk about creating safe spaces to be themselves, safe spaces for this, for lots of different purposes, whether to do with migration, mental health, all sorts of crossover issues. But it's a very glib phrase now, isn't it? I mean, I guess I'm curious as to what is involved in a safe space of storytelling that creates that openness. And it sounds to me like you developed relationships. You weren't just a easy breezy in and out, hi, we're here to do something, here today, gone tomorrow.
There is another project that I work on where they meet every week and have lunch, so I'll go along to the lunch. Like, it's a familiar face, isn't it? Go to the Christmas do, you know, and I really enjoy it. So it's about that kind of, as I say, building trust and being part of whatever's going on.
I believe that's a challenge for you then, Billy, because it's like, how do you capture, you know, in all that graphic design and bringing the website together, I can imagine communicating that sense of storytelling in connection with the objects, in connection with each other, being actually quite a huge challenge to capture on a website.
Well, yeah, you don't, I mean, of course, you don't have the objects anymore because you just have you have the image. But then in the way that that image gets recorded, you know, presumably most of the time I expect from the same person who's you know, contributing it, that can be quite telling in the way, you know, how carefully it's been photographed. Has it been laid out and photographed? Is it a photo of an old photo? Some of them are surprisingly kind of shot quite, you know, in a quite a kind of wonky way. it's almost like I have to, you know, I've got something I want to contribute.
Urgency, kind of, maybe. There's an urgency to share.
You just capture it. And there's almost no, obviously, I don't know if you've gone through art and design education, you'd think that I would never photograph something like that. But there's other, it's almost like, well, it has been captured and I'm showing it. So it's not.
So it's very much in the moment. Almost over the shoulder and taken from within the space. But that's a very authentic way of capturing that, isn't it? It's rather than devising, plotting and posing. That seems to me quite an authentic way.
And that, I mean, that was part of the brief when I got involved, that Carolyn Mary was saying that the way everything has been sent, I know that creates some issues with regarding, you know, any typos in writing, like how truthful are you to how people sent it in on that level. Yeah. But regarding the images, then there was, you know, a clear sort of direction in that response, that we don't want to be cropping and straightening things in Photoshop and color correcting and, you know, enhancing, saturating colors or sharpening the image. And in some ways, it's almost like futile anyway, because everything has been photographed under so many different conditions.
It feels like you've moved from graphic design into being partly making the document and managing an archive.
Archive, I was going to use the word archive. I think it is an archive all around, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it seems to me you've taken those photographs, you've documented, you've been a witness to this.
Well, I haven't taken the photographs because the photographs were sent in. The photos were sent by the contributors.
But those are the same. Lovely.
Not to try to you know, fiddle with them.
So okay, so you're very much managing the archive and creating this document, and it is very much then a mix. Then that must be a mix of what Mary and Carol gather and what the participants contribute themselves. So it's a very collaborative approach. It's not about you just doing this. It's interesting with collaboration where you can have a brief and an idea of what thing is going to be and how it's going to turn out, and then the participant gets involved and they've got other ideas. But this sounds to me like it's actually quite negotiated and quite out of the conversations you've had with the people in the group. Would you say you've
absolutely. Sorry, Billy, do you want to answer that? Because I was going to say, like, you know, if we think about it, you know, we should remember to say that it's a different iteration of the project, right? Iteration of the project, it's patterns of migration. So the workshop is one space and the online exhibition is another space. And there, you know, we've talked about the workshop a bit, but when it comes to the online space, what Billy's talking about is really important. And then comes what is the image, what is the representation of the image, the cropping, the presentation, and the narrative that goes with it. And the curatorial approach, which is very thin, as, you know, intentionally, as Billy said, we don't want to, you know, be making too many kind of editorial decisions, if you like. But still, you know, there is a way of, you know, we're tagging it, that's a decision. We're re-archiving it, and that's a decision. We don't mess with the color, but there is a frame there that it has to fit. So all of this is a different iteration of the project. And the images is another enabler through the same, you know, patterns of migration, if that makes sense.
Yes, I like that. Another enabler. Billy, you were going to say something there.
No, I was going to say it's always like most design projects start with, you know, like a Word document and a bunch of JPEGs in a folder. And it's almost like, well, what are you going to do with that? And how are you going to help decide what you're going to do with that? And I think this was, a lot at the start, the discussions we had were about that it's much more about the stories.
Yeah.
And the images are there, and they represent, but it's kind of the driving force is the stories. Mm-hmm. And then as a designer, of course, you're trying to kind of give shape to the whole thing, mm-hmm. and to have a website that works and has its own identity, and you kind of understand how you navigate it. So that was a decision in the website of just drawing a quote from the text. Mm-hmm. So in a way, yeah, the way into each item is through a quote. So that was the, I guess, decision curatorially, let's say, of how these things appear online. They appear through a segment, through a quote from each story.
So a quote from each story. So you're literally taking that slice of time and using that to curate and bring this iteration of it together on the website.
So when you're swiping through the different pages, you're swiping through different quotes. And if you go downwards, you can see the image, you can see the whole story. You can see maybe multiple images, or some people sent images of their mom, of their granddad, of, you know, so there's more sort of detail often when you go down.
There are some surprises along the way, and what's been interesting with the submissions, and it kind of makes sense really, is given what I said earlier, is there are a lot of rather than textiles or objects of clothing, there's a lot of images sent in, historical kind of photographs of people wearing things and talking about the memory of that person wearing them. So that's been a surprise, and rather beautiful actually. And in many ways, those are the kind of most interesting images on there, aren't they? So often when you photograph a garment, it can look kind of very flat or uninteresting. It needs the person in it to bring it alive. So I think that's been an interesting part of the website, the stuff that came in.
I love that, because actually often when you go in a museum and you see an object and it's from an everyday object and it's from a group or a community, it gets tagged with how it was used, the type of practices, and it's an overall thing. This way, they're curating their own museum of objects, and this time the object is put into the context of their memory, their story, their emotional connection to that object. And it's a completely, different approach to how we would go around some glass cases in the Pitt Rivers Museum, for instance.
Absolutely.
It would be interesting to see this reimagined as a Pitt Rivers with the objects and the photographs and the personal quote. And it brings me to two things that I guess I am curious about out of this process that you've gone through is what you learned from working in this way with these groups and each other, and also what did you learn from the stories? So it's kind of a two-pronged question.
How shall we tackle this?
Yes.
Working with each other.
let's start. What did you learn from your participants? Let's start with that, maybe.
Well, I think what I like with this as a structure is that it's quite intimidating to tell a story.
Yeah.
Also, because everyone has different skills and everyone is, you know, some people are good at it, some might feel they're not very good at it, but somehow the image then serves a bit as I don't know, not as a crutch, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, but once you
enabler
off the back of the image, you have the story. So somehow everyone goes about it in a different way, and some people are very matter of fact, like, here's this and it was worn like that and that's that. And you know, that works too, and it says a lot about the person sending it. So I like, how I don't know, the contributions vary from being more, let's say, literary to more just matter of fact.
Yeah, that's an interesting insight, how people interpret how to present something that is personal.
Well, it seems to I mean, yeah. I'm just going to tag along to Billy's observation to say that I'm also, as a, you know, with my academic hat, I'm also learning a lot, not only from the stories and from these notions of belonging that I'm very interested in, but actually about the actual material, the image in this sense, right? So an image that was scanned or photographed and resent, you know, how is that, what does that image want to say? Like, you know, in the WQDJ Mitchell's words, like, how is the image that it was, there were so many layers of how it was taken in the context, the historical context it was taken, the cultural context it was taken, the life that it had so far, you know, and then the representation through a website alongside other images. I mean, it's all obvious things that really kind of excited the visual culture academic in me. And how has it been photographed? You know, is it been printed? Is it, you know, scanned?
Is that still then, I suppose that's a connection to where you started though, isn't it? It's still about how things are passed on, how things are kept, how they then translated by, let's say, a next generation or the next pair of hands that receives it, and in what form that takes it. So it's still, I could see why that would be fascinating, because it is like a continuation of that pattern. What is this thing that passes through, or where it's copied, changed? Because I mean, you could say similar to a garment where it gets worn, where it gets mimicked, copied, you know.
But you know what this conversation made me think is, like, really, I mean, the first time I've ever done that, and that might be useful, but I'm just going to keep it very, so the first time I've done that was during an interview during my PhD. And because I was working with Greek political refugees, many of whom lived in Germany, I actually traveled and interviewed them, you know, in Hungary and Germany. And so I started having these conversations with, you know, these older men, which, you know, it was absolutely great, and asking them about their lives. So this is, you know, sunlight. But long story short is that when I started bringing the magazine that I wanted to ask them about, started passing it around, started reading it with them, you know, that kind of our interaction with the object, their triggering of the memory and the emotional, you know, kind of sharing, kind of all of this stuff that are happening, it was just an eye opener, actually. And so that's why when it came to the patterns, again, you know, this passing of the objects, it kind of triggers stories that you don't even know you have.
Yeah.
You know, until you're in that space, right? Sorry.
Back to involuntary memory.
Well, also, yes. But you know, but also guided, because there is an object there that kind of focuses, right? It's not just about something about your life. It's about telling me about you.
So what about you, Carol? What did you learn from?
I've learned a lot. I think the willingness of people to want to share their stories and their generosity in sharing them has been wonderful. But also kind of, it kind of reinforces the kind of the value of kind of textiles and clothing in our lives. Everyone's got something probably in their wardrobe that has a memory. And I go back to the idea of the souvenir. Not everybody has those, but it seems to be, from what we've found out so far, that most people, not everybody, for different reasons, have an emotional connection to a garment or a textile in their past or the present, that they're not willing to let go. They're not willing to kind of give it to the charity shop. They're not willing to kind of pass it on. They hang on to it for various reasons.
So I'm curious about that in the context of diaspora then. So that emotional connection, what are your observations on that? If we get to the crux of this in your title, migration, we're dealing with communities of people who have migrated. When you talk about that emotional connection with the clothing and the garment and the story, what is the significance of that for that community, do you think?
I'm not going to enter it, but I don't think they're always a community, as in they don't have common characteristics, languages, or there's not a shared space necessarily. It becomes a shared space, you know, when we are on the website or when we are sharing a space in the workshops. But if I bypass that, there's a lot of layers there, right? There's a, as we were talking about, as a methodology, an approach of a enabler, the object being an enabler and the story being an enabler of emotional sharing, or memory sharing, or, you know, life sharing. So definitely in that kind of interview, if you like, object-based interview space. But what is interesting is when you're sharing the space with many people, then that becomes a collective experience. And I think collective more than community. And it becomes a shared space where, you know, potentially, and if you were asking me, that would be my, that would be my dream of like using, keep on using this methodology of even questioning this kind of role of migration, the fact that we're all migrants in many ways, you know,
absolutely
belonging in different kind of spaces, because that's something that brings us together, right? This personal narratives.
Would you say by doing this then that it cuts through some of those broad brush strokes that are applied in talking about migration, diaspora, community, you know, or would you say this going for the personal narrative and creating spaces where people can have a collective experience cuts through that to get people to actually share much more personally what is a sense of belonging or what is home or what are the things that are part of that? Do you think then that has quite a connecting power to it that goes beyond just this titling, labeling?
Absolutely. If you're right, I mean, I didn't want to kind of continue speaking, but yeah, absolutely. It doesn't even cut off it. It bypasses it altogether. You know, it doesn't even ask the question. Because, you know, there's a lot of work and art-based projects around migration and diaspora, actually, almost too many, if you like. But here in our project is also opening up to a mobility, you know. So it's so absolutely I have an interest in diaspora, for example. Kind of Billy does because he's an emigre himself, and we're coming from also a story of migration, and we all are in many different ways. So there are these kind of historical bigger narratives that we fit into, but it's also about this mobility of the object in relation to the owner, and who tells the story, the object that is being photographed or passed around, or the owner who creates a narrative. So for me, it's like, as a designer and a visual culture, it's a juxtaposition, right? It doesn't necessarily tell you that one illustrates the other. The image doesn't necessarily tell the story that the narrative, you know, trying to say, however short, or the excerpt itself. It actually either complements it sometimes, even opposes it. And so all of these elements that are coming together, in a layout of sorts. I mean, that's how we design and see the world, in layouts.
I do like this. I think there's a sense of revealing patterns of human condition and patterns of human questions about where we find ourselves, and how we emerge and grow and what we take with us from place to place as, you know, several possible results of migration in different forms. I just think it opens up that conversation in rather a beautiful way to be facilitating and talking with people about what actually makes home for us, what actually it means to carry home with us, what it means to different people, different cultures, but different experiences, but on a much more personal level that doesn't group, tag and label in categories so much. So, I agree, but perhaps doesn't cut through, it bypasses it altogether.
Sometimes is an absence, right? Because sometimes it's an absence. It's the object that you didn't photograph or you haven't got anymore. And these stories are also, you know, I mean, we recently had a story with no image and we were like, okay, let's put it. Yeah, absolutely. You know, but
it's powerful. It's powerfully connecting, isn't it? When you put it all like that, I think. So I suppose that leads me to ask, okay, let's bring it away from those sort of weightier matters for a minute. What have you learned from working with each other as a collaboration? Dare I ask?
We all love each other.
Of course you do, love and harmony. Come on.
Did we avoid that question?
I'm curious, you know, these things take negotiation, don't they? They're not always cut and dry or easy to, you know, I mean, there's some clear roles, you know, Billy, you've been shaping the website and things, but beyond that, you know, what's it been like having to collaborate and work together, sometimes online, sometimes apart?
I'm gonna say something, then I'm gonna let you know, Barbara and maybe Carol carry on. But what I want to say is, I've just been looking at Carol. It's like, well, we have used our ethnicity or belonging to our advantage. So a lot of the times, Carol being a Northern Lass and me being a Greek, we're just saying, okay, let's cut the crap. I didn't like what you did there. Oh, you know, why did you? So we are kind of, so our collaboration has gone through this space, and oh my God, that's so important. And if it wasn't there, we wouldn't be here after quite a few years now, actually, that we have this project running along.
Did we say it'll be 2021?
Yes,
we did, didn't we?
So we started talking in 2019.
I mean, I think it's 2019. Did you just say
we started talking about it?
Okay,
nothing happened until
So I mean, it is an interesting one, isn't it? Reflecting on that, and I can kind of talk a bit about me and Mary, Albert and Louise. So yes, we do tussle, you know, because we're different people, but fundamentally, we're coming from the same place.
We've got
the same principles underlying everything. So although we've got different ideas and we're bringing different things to the table, and Mary works in a different way to me. I mean, it's been brilliant working with Mary and Billy, because I think we're all bringing something valuable to the table.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you can say you can straight talk as well. I think there's a sense where there's a certain honesty that's required with that. And absolutely, when you're dealing with such sensitive issues as well, you must, and your own personal experiences being entangled with that, I'm sure. For Billy, what have you learned about collaborating?
Let's come clean. Billy and I have been friends. I mean, we're not let's come clean. It's been alluded to, but we are friends for many years. So,
But I think maybe because you two had worked on it for a while. Yeah, my experience was quite pleasant, in the sense that you were both very positive and enthusiastic about the design. I think there was, I guess the only tricky thing was, like, what is the scope of the website? Like always, when you're designing something, you're sort of compromising, you're editing, you're saying the website can do this thing and that thing, but they can't do everything. So there's a sort of, I guess, a bit of pushing and pulling regarding what exactly does the website do. And what does it not do? But otherwise I felt it was quite positive. But I don't know if I'm straight. I'm sort of straight talker again, but I'm a bit, I think I sulk a bit. So I'm not such an open talker. So sometimes, it's worked out.
But when he can sulk, you know, on MS Teams on the other side, it doesn't matter. So it's
So the virtual has enabled
nobody noticed
bypassing really stalking.
But I think that's lovely. I think that's, you know, there's ups and downs in a collaboration like this, and of course there are sensitive things that cross over in that as well. And I also feel that the website is very much, it seems to have been quite an experimental growing space out of this. It's had to very much the space created in the workshops, there's certain parameters and things that are you've been working with that help shape that. And there are different sorts of parameters with the website, aren't there? And it's a completely different space. And you've had to push around what is possible in order for it to be another iteration rather than just this is a website demoing or showing this. So I guess we're at the point of then.
I wouldn't even call it an online exhibition.
An online exhibition.
The idea, I think, with any design project is that it adds something. It adds something that wasn't there before. And then it helps you see it in a different way.
Okay, so what next?
Well...
what is interesting is just, what leads us to what next or not is that we're almost like a, maybe like a band that it's not a main job. We also have other jobs. So this is a methodology and an enabler again for all of us in our different research and practices. And so we kind of meet in this happy space, if you like, a lot of times. And then we have other, projects and other bands to play, or other jobs to carry on. So I think that's also really important, going back to both the collaboration and the role of the online exhibition.
You're having to meander and negotiate around several other things, aren't you?
Mm. Yeah, but being as a positive thing, this is not, this is the space that we meet to do patterns of migration, basically.
Mm. Well, okay. We did meet recently online, though, and talk about it's a good question, what next? Where do we go from here? This podcast is really useful, I think, as a reflective piece about where we do move from here. I think one of the things I've noticed with the online exhibition is it's a very kind of positive. The stories are very, very nice. They're lovely. They're beautiful, some of them. So I'd like to continue in that vein and do something. With the stories and maybe from that. Again, what's interesting, we haven't really had time yet to actually look at, treat it as a kind of data collection and start looking for kind of relationships or kind of things that are themes, that kind of thematic analysis. Oh, found the right.
I was going to wonder about that because I was like, when you say what next, you've got all of that. You've got so much already. Do you keep going with the workshops? Do you keep it's not an either or even, is it? But there is an element of, you have mentioned several patterns and themes to do with belonging, home, objects, specific relationships that emerge out of that, from parental relationships and so on. So you've got all these themes, but no sort of way of analyzing it as yet.
I think we need to presenting. Do that. But just as a wild card, and I'm kind of throwing myself at the mercy of Billy and Mary here.
Good again, experimental space.
Exactly. Again, kind of, I was quite surprised at the amount of kind of wedding kind of pictures that people were sending in of their parents getting married and we ran something similar at UConn. I did a workshop with the students and they put up a lot of photographs of their parents perhaps getting married abroad, and then maybe they'd have another wedding in the UK when they came here. So there's these two very different kind of sets of clothing going on.
Yes. Very fascinating.
So I quite like to go down that route, but as I say, I'm throwing myself at the mercy of Billy and Mary here. It'd be interesting to get that.
I can throw myself in your mercy too, actually.
It sounds like you're honing in on particular stories and visual analysis and things that you've noticed, comparing photographs and images. So that sounds quite a joyful place to be in a project.
I think so, Joanna.
Absolutely.
So
we've talked about in the past as academics of like kind of writing about the methodology, itself. We haven't really gone anywhere near the analysis. But if I'm going to throw myself in, I would like to also use the methodology going forward to do a workshop with policymakers. I would like to go with like full on migration, kind of policy and having photographs of people's grandparents or wedding dresses, and there's a combination, and talking about this, the notion of mobility, maybe in the UK, maybe here and now, maybe with what's happening in the world.
Do you want to just push that out a little bit, Mary, because it's interesting about your perspective on mobility, your perspective on policy, and maybe how those workshops have made you think about that.
I mean, I think it's coming from a place that I don't work with like kind of British society, and I'm not that interested academically. But Brexit being an issue, the rise of fascism in Europe being, an issue, and then going down to, the end of visa and hurdles that people have to come, to go through to just arrive in this country right here and now. And I know it happens in many other countries. That would be patterns of migration might be a enabler of some really interesting conversations that could be fun, with the people who potentially push buttons or make decisions. So I'm thinking about it in these terms, really.
So it would be interesting, depending on what people brought with them when they came into the country alongside the processes they went through. That would be quite an interesting way of looking at gathering more information on how those processes, what those processes are like for people, and how difficult they are.
Yes, but also it would be interesting to ask the actual people who work in these positions. Yeah, maybe. Billy?
Well, I don't know if this is not really a plan. It's more like what I enjoyed from the contributions is this idea that you hold on to these things. I think the wedding dress is a typical example of that. You hold on to all this stuff because it's too important not to. And maybe with a bit weirder objects, like I've held on to some stuff my dad had when he died. And one is this. He has this watch that broke and he put tons of sellotape around the strap. And someone said, oh, you should put a new strap on. And I thought, I know, but I kind of like the sellotape. Like, that's why I kept it. Like, if I get the sellotape off, it's not my dad's watch. And I think a little bit, like, when you take a photo and put a short paragraph and send it to the website, it somehow now can live outside you. You can, in a way, you can put it to rest. It's you've given it some sort of shape. And you don't have to just wonder what you're going to do with it forever.
Yeah.
It's a resting place for all these objects to go and live.
It's a repository. That's what we called it. It's a repository. Yeah.
So like would you
place as well, though.
Would you say then your methodologies or your methods for this pursuing these things would alter as a result of those observations or those things that you want to look at? Because Mary, you mentioned sort of the post-Brexit situation, the sort of mobility issues that have come with that, and very different sides of the argument, and then people who are caught in the middle of those arguments. And Carol, you're talking about comparing wedding dress photographs and people marrying in one country and then having a version over here, which I find fascinating. And then Billy not wanting to fix or mend, but bring the broken objects as they are, as significant memory objects. Do you think that does change the direction or change a little bit of the conversations and methods that shape this project a little bit, or deepens them in some way?
I'd say deepens them, and I'm not going to entertain it now, but I think they're all the same if you go at the end of it. You know, these weddings that are happening in different places, they are happening because usually migrants have to have a wedding and another official paper. So, you know, these are very similar questions. And when, you know, you are a migrant maybe or not, and you're resting that place of that, you know, through the photograph on the website, you're still kind of sharing, and you're also saying, I'm here, you know? So, so there is this, I think, deep inside, and I can kind of continue with that, but I'm going to leave it, rest it there. I think we are actually, coming from the same place, or want to go to the same place.
Yeah. And I think as well, maybe you're challenging also sort of, a little bit around the language of what we have around these topics and issues. Some language gets very settled, doesn't it, and very normalized and familiar, and we've stopped to question what it really indicates. And I guess we've come full circle back to earlier when we're saying your project actually bypasses not bypasses the issues, but bypasses the labeling to deal with the personal of the stories and the human condition of being moved, choosing to move, having to move, or breaking it down a little bit like that. Okay, so
also collective may I be annoyingly
and the collective
personal, yes. And personally political, and personally collective,
personal as political and as collective. I think that's a great point of which to sort of come towards an end. I just wanted to draw attention to, I know you had a latest call out on your website. It'd be nice to just finish with giving you space for a plug of that.
Go on, Mary.
patternsofmigration.com, patterns as in patterns, of and migration as in migration. You can go there and browse through the exhibition, the online exhibition, the ever-growing exhibition, and send us an image and a narrative. It could be any length, it could be any resolution, maybe, I would say. And then, you know, we will make it into the right resolution to go into the website and rest with all of the other objects and their stories.
I like the way you used rest then. That's and on that note, we will take a rest. I want to say thank you to all three of you. You've been brilliant.
Thank you, Joanna.
Thank you. Lovely, thoughtful conversation about a project that I feel you've brought a sensitivity to the political, just a political rather than an ideology. And I think that's actually that human touch is really lovely. So thank you very much, and I hope to hear more in the future.